Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back. It's a Tuesday episode.
Yes, it is. Tuesday.
And I got to tell you something, Zach. Things aren't looking good in relationship land for Paul.
No.
Because we're talking we're talking about minute 131 today.
Yes.
Through 132. Picking up where we left off after yesterday's episode of minute 130 through 131.
Specifically of Dune Part 2.
Of Dune Part 2 from 2024, directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Right, right. No other minute 131 or 132 of any other movie will be discussed on today's episode.
Better not be.
I have notes if we need them on other movies, minutes 131 through 132. But
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Go.
I didn't write those notes.
God damn it.
You put me on the spot. I actually don't have any notes. That would be pretty funny if I were just like whipped out other minute 131s though.
All right. So anyways, in minute 131 of Ocean's 11,
in Pauly Shore's Back to School.
No, we are talking about Dune Part 2. We left off. Chani is having none of Paul's shit at this point in time. But as we talked about last week, she's Fedaiken. She goes where her leaders go.
That's right.
She fights for her people. And that is what she's doing.
And John, I got to say, before we get too far into it.
Yeah.
Wow. Almost a wordless minute.
Almost.
We get one word this minute.
We do. And we'll get to that when we get to
it. I know. I'm just saying we haven't had a wordless minute in a very long time.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me. it's been a while, but you know what? Let's go through it.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about it as we do with every other minute in this movie.
You know the format. Let's do it.
Yeah. Chani's having none of Paul's bullshit.
No.
We left off with him looking longingly at her from across the map after laying out his battle plan.
Yeah, kind of smirking. Yeah, a little smile on his lips.
Yeah. And she responds with nothing more than a scowl.
Yes.
Well, sorry, I take that back. Nothing more than a scowl and then grabbing her shit and walking 10 feet the other way, turning her back to him. Getting back down on her knees and like wrapping her blue scarf, which as we talked about earlier, was her symbol for her love for him from Denis Villeneuve himself, around her right shoulder.
Now, I just want to say something.
Sorry, her right bicep.
Yes. I just want to say something about this duffel bag that she drops on the ground.
Yeah.
You know me. I fucking love a good bag.
Who doesn't?
God, I love a duffel. Back, fanny, even a suit bag. I love them all. They're great bags. And I wish they would do merch for this, like this duffel bag in particular.
Because, just this duffel bag merch. Yeah.
Well, I mean, amongst other things, but like specifically right now in this moment, I wish that you could buy a duffel bag of Fremen design. God, that would be so much good. So fun.
So are you telling me that you would amend your take home from the set to be this duffel bag?
Well, when we asked that question, I didn't know this or I forgot this bag existed. So yes, I would add this on my Mount Merchmore.
Okay. All right. Well, anyways, she starts wrapping this scarf around her bicep. And we get a moment of her, you know, looking out on the basin.
Yep.
Once again, seeing all of the Sardaukar logistics and everything happening.
Yep. You got the egg, you got the ziggurat, and you got the massive storm behind her.
I was just going to say, too, yeah, we see that looming storm, it is very thick, very dense, just like the one that we saw when Paul and Jessica were being chased away from the Nexus and Dr. Kynes's lab.
Describe it in the movie, in I believe.
Orny 2.
At some point, but definitely in the books, a great-grandmother of a storm.
Yep. We talked about that on Friday last week.
Gotcha. It's a fun little thing in the books. As the storm gets bigger and bigger and bigger, they just keep adding greats to it. So at some point, they're like, great-great-great-grandmother of a storm.
I'm your great aunt, eight times removed of a storm. Yeah.
So from here, from Chani looking out over the basin, we smash cut to the Baron's balls pumping in and out slowly.
God damn it.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong, John?
You're talking about the breathing apparatus pulsating.
It's the Baron's balls pumping in and out slowly. That is what is happening on screen in this quote-unquote PG-13 movie.
Not in my Christian Minecraft server.
No, absolutely not. This is disgusting. I actually cut it off after this. I don't have any more notes.
I was disgusted.
No, it's his medicine balls. It's medicine balls are pumping in and out slowly.
You could just call them his respirators. That's what they are.
I think my way's more fun.
Oh, God. For once, Vladimir is not the looming presence in a room, though.
No, he's not. He's floating still.
Barely.
Yeah. Just a foot or so off the ground. And he's bowing his head. We see him descending, even. We get a wide shot of this room. And this is what I was talking about yesterday when I said some of the interior shots of the ziggurat do not exactly lend to the idea that this was just a pop-up tent. There's a lot of stone here. A lot of stone, a lot of marble, a lot of like natural looking things that typically, I'm fine with being wrong, typically do not come in a set them up fast kind of tent.
Typically.
Now, this is 30,000 years into the future, so who knows?
Sure. Yeah, we also don't know like how high up this interior part is inside of the tent. Like, we know that the tent ceiling goes very high in this area, so who knows?
This is just like a capsule that they put on top, maybe?
I would be more inclined to believe that this is more towards the bottom.
Well, the only reason I said it on top is because it gets what looks like natural light coming in from the top here.
Sure, but we also don't know how long those skylights are. Because you know how you've been in some houses where there's very shallow skylights in the ceiling, and then there's some houses where there's very deep skylights in the ceiling.
And there's some houses that have a system of tubes and mirrors that transport light into faraway rooms away from their natural light source. It's a real thing. It's really fucking cool.
No, I've never actually seen that before.
No, it's really fucking cool.
Oh, okay.
A lot of like houses like where part of it is like subterranean.
Mm-hmm.
They will have these literally just a system of tubes and mirrors that mimic skylights in the interior room, but it's picking up the light from outside.
Interesting.
It's very neat.
Okay. So as for your observations about like the stone and everything versus the metal, there's Art and Soul calls out two distinct components of this, which are the polished metal and then a brushed metal to have that stone-like appearance.
Okay.
But they don't make any like indication that there are stone components in here. There are major stone components in here.
Okay.
So that's what makes me think that this isn't too potentially out of the ordinary.
Gotcha.
Or not out of the ordinary, out of like a reasonable expansion of things.
Yeah.
In this.
It's feasible.
Pop-up tent. Yeah.
Yeah. What I can say, is a whole heck of a lot of stairs in this room.
There's so many stairs. And the reason why there are so many stairs is because it's to give, quoting from Art and Soul here, a visual representation of the hierarchy of power and the shifting dynamics that exist between the emperor and the leaders of all these great houses, which is why at the start of the scene, we see Vladimir bowing and we see Fade and Rabin both behind Vladimir bowing in their own ways too.
Yeah.
They are, placing themselves well below the feet of the emperor.
Sure.
And then along the sides of the Emperor's rising platform, we have other members of the Imperial Court that are sitting off in their own seats.
Mm-hmm. Lots of soldiers too.
Lots of Sardaukar, obviously.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the Emperor needs to be protected. So it's just kind of there to remind Vladimir, like, in a sense, if anything, for appearances, who the big boss is.
Right. Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The only thing that I thought about when I saw this room is this could have been a good place for some glow globes.
You know, it would have been a really fucking good place for some glow globes, but instead we'd have to get natural light in.
Yeah, well, Denis, I know you listen. I think you missed the mark on this one.
If I don't have a scene in, or if I don't have a glow globe in every scene of Dune Messiah... I'm going to lose my fucking mind.
I'll get the fan edit out there. We'll just plop one in.
But with like a really bad chroma key.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to look natural.
Perfect.
So the Baron goes into a full bow. Raban and Fade follow his lead on either side of him. Raban is to his left. Fade is to his right. And they kind of look at each other, and I couldn't tell if this was concern or confusion. It's kind of hard to tell with them. But it's a face that we haven't really seen from these characters ever before in the movie.
We definitely, it's a more familiar face on Rabin though, because he's like kind of afraid.
He's kind of stumbling through the last part of this movie.
Yeah. So.
And this is where we start. I mean, really, just the last like 20 or so seconds of this minute is just a lot of looking around.
Yeah.
And it
people
reminds
people are looking up, people are looking down, people are mean mugging. Rabin's kind of like afraid. But I will say, one of the things that I love the most about this minute is Irulan's new digs.
Oh, she's in her spikiest outfit. It's just daggers all the way down, man.
It's daggers and chainmail all the way, baby.
It is awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. So Gaius Helm-Moheim looks down at Raban and Fade and Vladimir.
Yep.
Irulan looks at Raban.
She's mean mugging Fade.
Well, no, she looks at Raban first.
Yeah.
Raban looks at everyone. He's just like, oh, what, huh?
Dave Bautista does a very good, like, afraid look.
No, he's like, he's on the verge of panic at this point.
Yeah.
Or if he is panicking, he's doing a pretty good job of keeping it internal.
He's been on the verge of panic ever since Fade, like, fucking just decked his ass.
Does he do a throat chop in that scene?
No, it was a gut kick, and then a sweeping leg, and then Rabin just face plants hard on the concrete.
Yeah, and then a boot on the cheek.
No, knife on the throat.
I thought it was a boot.
Boot is in front of him. Okay. Kiss my boot.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You're right. Then Irulan shifts her eyes ever so slightly over to Fade.
And Fade is looking back up at her, and mm-hmm. Austin Butler's got a wandering left eye that's kind of not looking straight up.
and well, he's got to keep one eye on the prize, one eye on the enemy, one eye on the prize, one eye on the enemy.
And we get not a word, but we get a sound, because mm-hmm. we just hear Fade go, hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of grunts a little bit.
Hmm. It's not a grunt. It's more of just like a hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
And the Baron sits up from his bow, and he's kind of like slack-jawed.
He's slack-jawed. He's winded.
Yeah. This is the most exercise he's done in years.
Yeah. And we have a brief moment where it's like a very wide shot of the entire room. And you can see the distance between Shaddam and Vladimir. And then we get our one word.
Well, let's talk about it. Before we get to the one word,
yeah,
okay. Let's talk about this scene for a second. We get to see the Emperor in his like action pose on the throne. Did you notice this?
Yeah, he's kind of like leaning forward.
He's sitting like Picard would sit in this captain's chair.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of a fight. You know, he's like one side leaned out, like he's ready to hop up at any section or any second. And
Wesley's in the corner adjusting technology.
Yeah, and they're like, get the boy out of here. Now, and I know this was a perspective trick, but the two prominent Sardaukar guards look fucking massive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're also just big dudes, too.
I know, but they look like they would be, you know, if they were on the same plane, like 12 feet tall.
Yeah.
So it's just a perspective trick, but I do love the imposing view that it gives us of the Emperor compared to his army. Yeah. I think that it's telling, in a way, that he is a small man. And the only reason that he is in power is because of his massive fighting force.
Sure.
So a little subtlety there, a little subtext that I think is very fitting. We got Gaius Alemohime to his left. We got Irulan to his right. And then this is where we get a better view of the court people sitting off to the side. On the bleachers, I guess you'd say.
I guess that's like the closest thing. They have their own box seats.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But they're not sitting on boxes. They have like actual chair.
Right.
And then okay. We get our one word.
We get our one word now. Sorry, I had to go through that.
Baron.
I was wondering which of us was going to do it first. Baron. Yeah, that's it.
That's it. I will say, the way that Christopher Walken speaks makes the definitive cutoff between words when we're cut off mid-sentence like this very easy to know.
Because he puts a minute between each word.
Baron, you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to cast us back weeks and weeks ago when we were talking to friend of the show, Alicia.
Okay. From the Lorehounds. Go listen to their stuff, by the way. They're working on Alien Earth right now.
Well, yeah, that and Foundation, I think, as well.
I believe
maybe they
so,
just wrapped up Foundation. I don't know. But I just restarted my rewatch of Foundation and have been listening to their recaps, and fucking great. So, highly recommend. Something that I remember us talking about when Alicia was on was Christopher Walken a good casting choice for this role? And I think up until this word, I said yes.
Now you're feeling a little less.
And again, I haven't seen this movie in a long time. As soon as I heard the word Baron come from his mouth, I was like, no, it takes me out. It takes me out of the movie. Like, it's fun, but it's not great.
This takes me back to what we talked about last week. I think Michael Shannon would have been a really good Shaddam.
Yeah, he would have been good.
I mean, there's so many people that I could think of that would have also made really good emperors. And, you know, we talked about this with Martin, not on the episode, is kind of like between or whatever. Yeah. But Shaddam's not that old. He's not as old as Christopher Walken is. I think he's like maybe 60, but he appears no older than like 35 or something like that.
All right. So,
because of the spice.
So criteria, needs to be a strong, powerful presence when they act.
Yep.
Could be an older person, but needs to be able to portray someone younger. And I guess that's just, I mean, those are my two criteria.
Jude Law. Recently watched the Young Pope and the New Pope lately.
I think he's a little too mild.
I don't think so.
I think he has a quiet intensity that is not exactly what you need.
No. Recently watched the Young Pope.
That's
there's a lot of quiet intensity in that, but there are also moments where he just fucking goes off. Yes,
that's very true. Yeah, that would have been good. Jude Law would have been great. I mean, I love a Jude Law.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't love Jude Law?
So
I also, speaking of the Young Pope and the New Pope, John Malkovich.
He would have been good. John Malkovich would have been real good.
John Malkovich would have been a really good.
Yeah, John Malkovich would have been really good. I was thinking of you. Okay, you've not read the Wolf Shift Dust books.
No.
Okay. So you don't know anything past what the show is.
No.
Okay. Okay. Then I'm gonna save
in that vein though.
Fucking Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins.
Yeah. He's got he's what, like 7.5 feet tall?
Yeah.
He's got that imposing view.
Yep.
Tim Robbins would have been great. No. Okay. So I'll save my theory or the reason I brought up Wolf Shift Dust for later.
Okay.
In the wonderful Avatar movies, 2009's James Cameron Avatar.
Sure.
The military guy who's the big bad?
Nah.
No? You don't think? He would have been fun. I can't remember his name right now.
Nah. So we talked about this very early on, I believe minute two of of this season. They talk about the casting decision for Christopher Walken. And they chose him specifically because, and I don't know if this is an insult to Walken or if just Walken's really good at portraying this, but they wanted an actor who could portray a feeble, failing emperor who is crumbling and cannot maintain control of his empire.
Well, they achieved that.
They did.
But that's not what should have been portrayed.
Correct.
It should have been a facade of power while it's crumbling underneath them.
Yeah.
So someone with a lot more machismo, I guess, would have been better, you know?
I don't think machismo, but more just like
false unearned confidence, maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, to that point,
there's so many actors that they could have gone with.
To that point, let's not stray too far from what's been on screen. Fucking Mark Strong.
Yeah, I mean,
if he wasn't already in Prophecy, or if they probably already had him lined up for Prophecy, but fucking Mark Strong would have been great. Yeah. Shaddam.
And Mark Strong did a fantastic job as Havoco.
Yes.
Like, Mark Strong was, aside from doing the podcast, one of the reasons why I, like, tuned into Prophecy as much as I did. Because he, first of all, is always just, like, great in everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Ooh. You know who could have been really good and is, like, on that is starting to age but could like pass as a 70-year-old but appears younger from like being under the influence of spice. Colin Farrell.
Yeah. Oh god, love a Colin Farrell. Yeah,
like especially like you want to talk about having a character who can portray someone that's like kind of scheming and in control, like everything that he did in the Penguin.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. What's that motherfucker can act.
What's that movie where he's basically like a gang leader / boxing gym? He runs like a boxing gym set in London. He wears like plaid suits the whole time.
I don't know.
Okay. Wow. It's a good one. It's very good. We'll look it up later. But he gives that kind of like strength and intensity in that show.
Yeah.
That movie. Yeah, he would have been good. Or, and just to wrap this up, because I feel like we've gone way far long in our casting. Let's have Josh Brolin clump it and play a bunch of different parts in this movie.
Josh Brolin's Dune.
Yeah, exactly.
Starring Josh Brolin, Josh Brolin, Josh Brolin, exactly. And Josh Brolin.
Absolutely.
Featuring Josh Brolin.
He can Eddie Murphy clump it. He can Peter Sellers it, whatever you want to call it. He can do it.
It's like that, oh God, what was that recent project that Mike Myers did where he was like 11 different people in the same movie or some shit like that?
I have no idea. That does not surprise me that he's done something like that.
Yeah.
But he's good at it though, and that's the difference. I almost said, God, who's Agent Smith in The Matrix? And then a million other things.
Oh,
Viggo Mortensen? No.
No, Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving. Oh, Hugo Weaving would have been great. I don't know if he could, I don't know if they could de-age him properly to do it, but if that's not the goal. I don't
think they would need to de-age him.
I mean, he's a young
man. He's old, but.
Yes, but he could play, I don't know. I just want them to have portrayed strength rather than weakness in the Emperor. Yeah. Now I get the point of the story that they're telling here, I guess, but that is a big departure from the books. And it also, I think, weakens Paul's ascension.
Yeah, I agree with that. We will get to it a lot more in a couple weeks, especially with a guest that we have lined up to talk about it.
Sure.
I have a lot of beefs with Paul's ascension.
All right. Sorry, I was thinking of a joke, but didn't work.
So. Yeah. Well, we have our one word this minute. Baron.
Baron. Yes. Oh, geez, Louise. All right. Well, sorry I started a 45 minute long casting discussion or however long it is. I don't know what you're going to cut it down to, but it was a long one. So those are our thoughts. All of that to say, I think we were a little bit on the opposite side of the fence as Alicia was back when we had that discussion.
Yeah.
And I am here to say officially, I've hopped the fence and I think I'm on her side now.
Flipping and flopping, Zach.
Hey, experience does a hell of a thing to a person.
Well, I don't have anything else for this minute. I don't know about you.
No. No, I'm going to save some book notes for tomorrow.
Okay.
Because they're mostly to do with the conversation that the Emperor has with the Baron, and I don't think it's right to start them now when all we've had is one word.
That's fair.
Okay.
Well, in the meantime, we have a lot more words online. We're on BlueSky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow to, in all reality, start this conversation, and we'll see you then.
All right, see you.